I am James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on what is now technically this 20th day of October 2010. It's still the 19th of October in Gay Paris, however, where I'm joined on the line by Max Kaiser, the financial brainchild dynamo behind MaxKaiser.com, KarmaBank.com, PirateMyFilm.com, The Kaiser Report on RT, On the Edge on Press Street TV, the Truth About Markets radio program, and probably several dozen other ventures that are yet to be discovered. Max Kaiser, thank you as always for gracing us with your presence.
James, always a thrill to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on, and I wanted to get you on today because, as you may have noticed, we have Armageddon in the U.S. housing sector at the moment with the robo-signers and bogus assignees and fraudulent papers and banks sending agents to break into houses that aren't even under foreclosure and missing deeds and uncertain titles and a whole host of other problems that are beginning to make the U.S. real estate market sound more and more like a third world economy. Tell us, Max, what is happening and who is to blame?
Well, the first thing that sticks out is three words, rule of law. And apparently the rule of law doesn't apply anymore in the United States. That's the big joke. Anyone who thought that the rule of law in the Republic was meaningful, the joke's on you, because if you have more than a certain minimum net worth, laws don't apply to you, and you can break them with impunity. And I just saw a quote from the CEO of the Bank of America saying that, we know we broke the law with these foreclosures, but heck, we got to defend our shareholders. So they're pulling up the drawbridges. It's back to neo-feudal times. You, the peasants, me, the peasants, indentured servants on the new Obama debt plantations. We got no recourse, no way to address our grievances. We're basically being sent out to Sherwood Forest to fend for ourselves. But anyway, that's now, unfortunately, not going to be reversed. The unless you want to rewrite Magna Carta, you want to restage the Declaration of Independence, you want to restage the Revolutionary War, and you want to recreate the Constitution of the United States, that's not going to happen. The U.S. is disenfranchised, and 330 million Americans are basically only hope is that someday soon they'll be hired on cotton plantations, because the price of cotton will be so high and the dollar so cheap that the only job available for everybody in America will be picking cotton. So get used to that old cotton picking song. Jump down, turn around, pick a bale of cotton. Yeah. But anyway, getting back to this fraud, there's four distinct pieces to it on the foreclosure fraud. Number one, of course, the mortgages were fraudulently sold to people. There was a fraudulent inducement. We know that in 2004, the FBI launched a major investigation into wide-scale mortgage fraud. A liar's loan, as the bankers were calling them, there's no such thing as a liar's loan. I mean, a mortgage is supposed to have some expectation of somebody paying back the mortgage. If you're selling them something that there is no expectation, you, the seller, are breaking the law. So they committed fraud in selling millions of mortgages. Number two, they try to foreclose on these mortgages, and they're breaking the law again. This law in particular, there's one interstate notary law that they've just chosen to ignore. It looks like Obama is going to forgive them and give them retroactive immunity from the law, just like Obama gave the telecom companies retroactive immunity when they found Verizon and those other companies spying on people illegally in America. Again, no such thing as the rule of law. Number three, they packaged up these mortgages into mortgage-backed securities, knowing that they were worthless, and sold them to pension funds, where they're rotting and going to zero, so people are going to be victimized a third way. Number four, banks like Goldman Sachs, of course, knowing that they were selling worthless mortgages, decided to make huge negative bets against the very things that they were selling, putting billions of dollars in their pockets. And, of course, Wall Street will have $144 billion in bonuses again this year by making bets on inside information and market manipulation on things that they know are bad because they packaged them, and now they're in the pension accounts, of course, they'll go to zero. So there's four distinct aspects of the fraud that have been committed by the banks. And the response from Obama and the Justice Department is, well, you know, if we have to, we'll just either give them immunity from the law, or we'll just change the law. But for whatever happens, there's absolutely no way that we can allow any banker to suffer any inconvenience as a result of their multi-trillion dollar fraud. And that's the state of play today.
Well, how about this for another layer of fraud? Apparently, the investment banks hired a due diligence firm called Clayton Holdings to examine the mortgage-backed securities that they were buying from the banks. And to test the mortgages to see if they really were as good and safe and sound as the banks were trying to portray them as. And when they found out that they were not, they didn't actually scrap the deal, as you would assume. They instead negotiated for a lower price with the banks and then passed it on to their investors without letting them know anything at all about the due diligence that they'd conducted on the mortgages to show that they were unsafe. So there's fraud after fraud after fraud after fraud after fraud, layer after layer after layer.
And of course, the Moody's and S&P, they gave their blessing to all these fraudulent deals, so they're part of the racket. You've got big money managers like Bill Gross at PIMCO, who gave his blessings to these frauds. So he's in on the racket. He trades on inside information, has been pointed out by Zero Hedge on a number of occasions. You've got the investment banks, the money managers, the politicians. They're in on the racket. So you've got this wide-scale racketeering. And until somebody takes these folks down to the courthouse and charges them with racketeering, as they should be, then there will be no abatement of the criminality, which is tearing up the fabric of the U.S. economy.
Because the judges are not in on the system as well?
Well, the judges, a couple of them are trying to make inroads. You know, I guess a couple of judges are demanding that notes are being produced, et cetera. But on the federal level, we see, you know, Obama put in this pocket veto about the problem with the interstate notary issue. He said, and they wanted to change the law to allow banks to lower the bar into their notary requirements so they wouldn't have any suffering as a part of their criminal behavior. So he made that a pocket veto. And there's no reason to believe that after the election, he won't revisit that and give them immunity as he did with the telecom companies and as he does with everybody else. I mean, Obama is just a guy who is a crook.
Well, that's a pretty succinct way of saying it. And, you know, a couple of years ago when I first heard you using terms like controlled demolition of the economy and financial terrorists, I thought it was just an interesting, you know, choice of words to get people interested in the issue. But it's really true. It's really, truly true. These are financial terrorists who are demolishing the economy on purpose. What is happening and how can these people be stopped?
Well, I mean, to add to a fifth layer to the four we outlined, there's also the fifth element, which are the credit default swaps, which is essentially insurance fraud. So again, Goldman Sachs, they have insured the collapse of these securities three or four times over again using credit default swaps. So they sell these short, they know that they're going to blow up, they blow up, and they also get cash in on the insurance. So that's insurance fraud to add to this mix of criminality. So you've got basically on an ideological level what I call suicide bankers and financial terrorism because they follow extremist ideology. Lloyd Blankfein, when he says he's doing God's work, well, let's see, who are the other extremists out there? Islamic extremists who think they're doing God's work, check. Okay, he misreads a basic book that misinforms him about his actions. Well, you've got Islamic extremists misreading the Quran. Lloyd Blankfein misreads Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, selectively pulling text bits out of that book to support his ideological extremist views. Okay, extremism in Islam, suicide bombers. Okay, how about Wall Street? Well, we've got suicide bankers. Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, these people who are willing to blow up their economy, blow themselves up for their extremist ideology. So you've got two major extremist ideologies. You've got Islamic extremist ideology, and you've got American Wall Street financial extremist ideologies. They're both at war now in the currency pits, and they're shooting trillion-dollar cannons of fiat currency at each other, and their objective is complete and utter destruction of the global economy. And the only market that's telegraphing what's really going on, obviously, is gold, because people realize that, well, if every fiat currency in the world is going to collapse due to these psychopaths, then you got to own gold. And that's why gold keeps hitting new all-time highs every month.
But if wealth is really just political power, then as the economy crashes, even if the wealth or the monetary wealth of the system starts to crash, the people who are consolidating the power still end up with more real wealth, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, that's why I believe we're going back to more of a feudalism type of system where you've got a few oligarchs, aristocrats, and monarchs who control wealth, they control hard assets, they control gold, and everyone else is an indentured servant. Everyone else is living basically on a debt farm. And you also see something happening in the technology space, which is adding to this. If you look at sites like Facebook with 500 million users, they have a virtual currency in association with a company called Zynga. And if anyone's on one of their games like Farmville, for example, as you get more time spent on Farmville, basically working for Facebook, you get to erect virtual toll booths around your work that you've done and be a rent seeker on your fellow Farmville participants. So they're teaching all this new 100 million, 500 million strong virtual gamers how to be rent seekers in the virtual world on behalf of their master. The head of Facebook is becoming the plantation owner on a virtual digital slave farm called Farmville inside Facebook. And Zynga is also been caught selling virtual currency on the side to people who have become addicted to Farmville. People who have become addicted to Farmville are paying $500 a pop in real dollars to get virtual currency to enhance their status on the game so that they can be a rent seeker against their other players on Farmville. So there's huge graft and corruption inside the virtual world. So that's the next generation of this virtual gulag casino nightmare. It's happening right in front of our very eyes on the so-called social networking sites. So that's the next generation. And the virtual currency economy is a multi-billion dollar industry. Companies like Zynga are going to go public for multi-billion dollar valuations. All they do is they create virtual currency that people covet to play virtual games that they use to cross over into the so-called real economy. So somebody ends up spending 15 or 16 hours on Farmville to make enough money to go to Walt to go to 7-Eleven and buy one slice of processed cheese. So they're working effectively for 2 cents an hour, 5 cents an hour, and they're happy to do it because they're, quote-unquote, playing a game. Well, you know, you're a cyber slave on a cyber plantation. That you'll never make more than 40 cents a day because you're competing with billions of other people on the same virtual plantation who are also trying to play this game for 16, 17 hours a day for a cup of coffee.
Well, that's exactly right, and I couldn't help but notice that you posted a link to the video of that video game designer giving that speech about the way points and will be used to control every aspect of our life in the future just about a week after episode 145 of The Corbett Report featured that video. So good to know that that you're keeping an eye on The Corbett Report, right?
Well, The Corbett Report is the linchpin of the resistance movement. I mean, anyone is not listening and watching The Corbett Report, it is clearly at a disadvantage.
You know I'm going to clip that and use that as a clip for my site. But anyway.
Please do. Listen, James, I mean, I've been on the James story for quite some time now. I mean, I know that you've got, your fan base is huge, and they're keeping it on the real.
As is yours, I'm sure. All right, well, let's bring this back down to reality. For people who are facing this foreclosure crisis and who are underwater right now, I mean, what do you suggest for them? Is there a moratorium in the offing, or what do you think they should be doing right now?
Like I said, there's no rule of law, so it's every man for themselves. And it's in the U.S., the population is being occupied by a corporate entity. They're being occupying the population. So you've got, what do you do when you're a colonial occupying subject in a new global economy? What, you know, how are you going to react to that? And, you know, I believe that, in my opinion, if you go back through history and you look at a couple of instances where people who were oppressed upon by colonial superpowers. Let's take India, for example. When the British colonial power, you had the rise of Gandhi and his genius of instructing the people to make their own salt and rallied a nation and got independence from their overlord, occupying master, the British Empire. Now, in America today, I'd say you make an analogy with Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is something that if everyone in America and around the world stopped drinking all Coke and Coke-related products and to take the stock price of Coke to zero, and its largest shareholder, Warren Buffett, took him in the gonads, along with Charlie, his little companion, Munger, that would strike a serious blow against the tyrants that have disenfranchised Americans.
But Max, the high fructose corn syrup buzz that they get from drinking it keeps them in a catatonic state that feels so good.
Well, then, look, economically speaking, if the corporations that are plugged into banks and plugged into the occupying force that is subjecting the U.S. population to indentured servitude, they are vulnerable to the extent that if people stop buying their products. Now, of all of the top 50 companies that you could look at as being the focus of a boycott, the one that stands up as being the most vulnerable, that is to say, for every dollar you don't spend of their products, you eliminate the greatest number of dollars from their balance sheet, is Coca-Cola. If enough people started boycotting Coke and Coke-related products, it would have a magnificent leveraging effect, because then the hedge funds, who before are victimizing the population, would actually enhance the interests of the population by selling short shares of Coke. So you've leveraged your boycott dollar by 10, 15, 20 times, because now the hedge funds are going to come in, start selling Coke stock short because they're losing revenue because nobody's drinking their products, and now the stock is seriously going down to zero per share. And once that happens, the entire dynamic changes. Suddenly, the folks that are doing the occupying, like the British Empire were in India, suddenly the dynamic changes and something's got to give. So as long as folks in the U.S. are okay living as coolies on Coca-Cola's plantation, then nothing will happen. But in someday, if they want to have self-respect, if they want to have some kind of dignity again, they're going to need to take some kind of coordinated action that doesn't require any money on their part, and that means boycott. They're going to have to do a strategic smart boycott, which means Coca-Cola. And for those of you who will now start writing emails about why Coke is not that bad and why some other company is worse, the answer is, we're trying to take a stock price down to zero in the most effective way possible in the shortest period of time. Don't give me your relative worst stories, because that's not the point. The point is, what's the most vulnerable and in the quickest period of time can be shattered, and that stock price down to zero. And the answer is Coca-Cola. That's the focus. And I tell people like Alex Jones this all the time, and for, I don't know why, but and I have a suspicion. When you start to talk about stock price, you're inviting a whirlwind of problems coming your way, because the folks, the corporations, will tolerate people to some degree saying that they don't like what they do. But once you start talking about their stock price, that gets their attention. Then they start, they put up the red flag, and they hit the alert button, and they do whatever they can to overcome this attack on their stock price. As the CEO of Bank of America said, he said, I know we're committing crimes, but I have to think of my shareholders. So I'm saying, look, buddy, we know you're committing crimes. That's why we're going to take your shareholders out on a stretcher, and we're going to beat the crap out of them. Anybody who's a shareholder of Coca-Cola is going to be bleeding out of every orifice of their body if they continue to hold on to that stock. That's got to be the attitude. Or, you know, declare defeat. You lost. You gave it all away. You fought a revolutionary war, and then you gave it all away.
In case Coke's lawyers are listening, I'm sure you meant that metaphorically. But at any rate, no, I fully agree that we do have to unhook ourselves from the corporate system in every and any way possible, and the strategic boycott is a great idea for doing that, and people can take a look at the Economics 101 video that we did a few months ago on that topic. But how about the idea of boycotting the banks and moving towards local banking?
It's a half measure. It's a half measure, and basically you're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, it's not a terrible idea, but it doesn't really get to the heart of the matter. It's not a terrible idea, but again, it's not the most effective idea. It does only get you halfway down the road. Whereas if you're boycotting a company like Coke, and you can do a lot more damage. The question is, where do I get the biggest bang for my boycott buck? And in the banks, you don't get as nearly enough bang as you do in the boycott buck as you do with Coca-Cola. You don't get hardly any bang for the buck. If you go after an oil company like Exxon or Chevron or BP, you don't get much. You do get a big bang for your buck if you go after a company like Microsoft, but it's almost impossible. You know, it's very difficult to go down that path for a number of different reasons. So after looking at 50 different situations, I figured out actually that the top three are Starbucks, McDonald's, and Coke. And of those three, the winner is Coca-Cola. And Coca-Cola's stock, it had been $60 a share. It's growing in revenues. It's growing in size. Warren Buffett's the biggest shareholder, along with Charlie Butt Munch Munger. And by simply not drinking that product, take the stock price down to zero. That's absolutely, everyone has the right to do that. But if Peter Lynch, you know, who's a famous money manager, can say, I love, you know, the products of XYZ Corp, that's why I'm buying the stock, it's perfectly okay to say, I dislike the products of this company, that's why I'm boycotting their products, and do so en masse until the stock price goes to zero. And then the dynamic changes. Suddenly the people have some leverage. Right now the people have no leverage. There's no recourse. There's no rule of law. What do? They can't do anything. The only thing they have is to stop consuming something selectively that will create enough economies of scale to take down a major Dow Jones component, Coca-Cola.
All roads lead to Coke, I guess. Well, Max Kaiser, excellent informative conversation as always. Tell us about your websites and where people can find your work.
Just search Max Kaiser and go down that path. You won't be sorry.
Maybe Max Kaiser is the linchpin of the resistance.
I have no comment on that.
Rise up. All right, excellent. Well, Max Kaiser, thank you once again for taking the time to talk with us.
All right, James.